Welcome to the last June edition of the PFF Forecast. We decided the best way to end would be just to recap the hearings today. Because I guess Trump said some interesting... No, I'm just kidding. Don't worry. you saw Eric's face, though. He got kind of excited. No, we're doing a mailbag podcast today. We got a ton of good questions from the syndicate. And there's still time. We're going live. So if you have questions, hop into the YouTube chat and ask away. We're going to take turns rotating through questions. It'll be a lot of fun. And we'll also talk about Eric potentially buying a puka shell necklace and whether he should do that or not. He's trying to get young again. Let's rock. I made a comment that, by the way, George and Eric here, PFF Forecast. Hello, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful midsummer's day. Eric got a lot of flack. I gave him a lot of flack for wearing an acid wash shirt on Sunday. He's figured that out. Mm-hmm. But you're really getting that kind of youthful vibe with the bracelet that you've got going on.
I know. My daughters, whom I love greatly.
They're great people.
Best dad in the world is the necklace that I got here.
Congrats.
I could coast from here.
You would think you'd get something more than like a handmade necklace for that, but like, you know, better than nothing. I guess it's appropriate for dads, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to get trophy.
Like, honestly, like I'm in that point of life, especially when I was younger and I was making less money, I would always be like, what do you want for Father's Day? And I'd be like, for you not to spend any money on me was like my, so like
look,
I started
you,
the bar really low.
A saint.
And now it's gotten higher as I've gotten older, which is this bracelet here. But yeah, I'm excited for this. I've taken down some comments that we got from like the iTunes stuff and
there's some good questions
and obviously good questions from the listeners over time, which is great. Do you want to start?
Well, I actually want to start with, so I'm going onto YouTube right now so I can watch the chat. And there's an old PFF video that showed up that is 3 years old. And it has a question for us. Does Dak Prescott deserve Carson Wentz money? Is the title of the video.
So amazing.
Going back and just reading questions that were like seriously discussed from 3 years ago would be a funny episode. Mm-hmm. And this one, I mean, this was, I remember debating this. What do you think? Does Dak Prescott deserve Carson Wentz money? Yes or no?
Doesn't that like bring you to, you know, when like, so I've gotten some flack, you know, in my QB tiers, for example, for not anointing Joe Burrow, not anointing Justin Herbert as mm-hmm. Hall of Fame quarterbacks after 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that is probably the biggest takeaway there is that, you know, we do need to see it for longer than 2 years. We do. And we've jumped the gun on a few players. We jumped the gun on Mahomes. When Mahomes, in his first year, we basically are anointing him as the best player in football.
You think we did jump the gun on Mahomes?
After he threw 50 touchdowns as a second-year player, I think we all like basically said he was the best player in football.
Okay.
And he was called the MVP. I think his level of play, Mahomes was better than Burrow or Herbert have ever been.
Oh, for sure.
And then he won a Super Bowl. But like he has not even necessarily reached the same heights as he had his first 2 years.
Of course not.
And so like I think – and that to me is like really the hard thing about being a Bills fan, about being a Chargers fan, even like – and I love everybody here, but a Bengals fan too, where it's like if you get these years out of these guys, you better cash in. Like I think of as a Kansas City fan, I'm like, you know what – you know they might – they're like a relatively small ride away from not having won anything. And the Bills haven't won anything. And, you know, the Chargers haven't made the playoffs with Herbert. And obviously with Burrow, like, I wonder in a couple of years if you're going to look back and think, you had a freaking 7-point lead against the Rams in the Super Bowl and you let it blow. And now Burrow's making Derek Carr money and he's, you know, or not even Derek Carr money, but Burrow's, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that Bengals team is just kind of close, but so not that close.
I think you're speaking in, not in treasonous is not the right word, but like people would say you're being a kind of a heretic right now. But I was just reminded of something yesterday by a good friend of mine, because this Kyrie Kevin Durant thing is going on. And a good buddy of mine, Ross, sent me a text and he was like, can you imagine telling somebody that Kevin Durant would have played with Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kyrie Irving, James Harden again, and have won only two championships with Steph? Like, what would you have said? And you'd have been like, that's ridiculous. But remember that team, and that is a great reminder of in sports, like you just can't take these things for granted. Someone in the chat, Glenn, said, yes, answer old questions. That would be a great show. Send us in good old questions. Go scour
YouTube, the globe.
Twitter. Find me some good old questions. We'll talk about them. Let's kick this off the right way. Why don't you start with your first listener question?
Okay, so this one is from you, iTunes, and it says, it's surplus value. Love the show. One question, how did you guys come up with your numbers for surplus value for Mac Jones? I love this, but I have no idea where this data is coming from, and how can I access it for all players? We said that Mac Jones last season was worth $28.4 million on a cap hit of $2.83 million, surplus value of 10 to 1. You know, so that depending on how you want to measure surplus value, you can either say it was, you know, 20, it would be like a little over 20, a little under 25 million, or you could say it's 10 to 1, as in 28 divided by 2.8 type of thing. This is something that's derived from PFF War. So, and we don't make war available for everybody. It's for the teams and broadcasts and stuff. We just had our friend Mike Tirico into the office today, and he was talking about war with us, what it was good for.
So you talked Ukraine, Russia.
Right.
That was not what I was expecting to come out of that conversation. But so Mike is a well-learned.
He is very, very good. And so essentially, like, for quarterbacks, and I'll tweet out the graphics, you know, fairly often, but for quarterbacks, every win above replacement is worth about $10 million. For non-quarterbacks, it's about $50 million. So that's kind of how we sort of spin that out.
Why is that?
Well, so the quarterback position is constrained by the salary cap, as well as the rookie wage scale really hurts quarterbacks on the top end. Like, Tom Brady is really like a discount. Patrick Mahomes is a discount. Aaron Rodgers is a discount, because the rookie wage scale gets guys in like Joe Burrow under $10 million when they're starting. But then the problem is the franchise tag also pulls them down, right? Mm-hmm. So if you wanted a franchise tag Dak Prescott, it was at a certain number that is actually probably very much less than what he's going to make. But the team always has the option of franchise tagging a player. So salaries are never going to get too out of control with that. And they're going to creep up, but they're going to creep up slowly. So that's one of the reasons. But they quarterbacks give you so much more of an outsized version of war that ends up what ends up being what it is. So Mac Jones last year was worth 2.84 wins above replacement. Multiply that by 10, so that's $28.4 million generated on the field, but he was only paid a salary of $2.83 million, a sort of cap hit. So that differential is surplus value. That's what we're working with here. You know, Terry McLaurin was another one. He's been worth about 0.4 wins above replacement over the course of his career, which is a little shy of $20 million APY. He, of course, got more than that today, which I actually don't hate, because – I think McLaurin earns more war if he plays with a better quarterback, which he's probably sure to do this year in Carson Wentz. But, you know, so that's kind of where we come up with those numbers. We're kind of looking again at, you know, how much value does a player generate versus how much they're being paid. And that's why, like, guys like me and George will regard a guy like Jalen Hurts.
Please regard me.
And Mac Jones.
People in the chat, name the movie.
Yeah, name that movie, which is a great movie.
It's a great movie.
We'll regard somebody like Mac Jones, Jalen Hurts, guys like that more highly when we're building a team than a guy like Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, because those guys are not necessarily generating as much war as they're being paid.
The interesting thing there that I was going to ask you as a follow-up question. Let's say 5 years from now, we learn that we were too, And I actually don't believe this will be the case. But let's do a pre-mortem. Let's say 5 years from now, we're walking around telling people, yeah, we overestimated how important quarterbacks were.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason?
In my opinion, the only way that we could come out and say we overestimated quarterbacks is if the league changed. So there is a scenario wherein everybody starts playing these two high looks, right? Everybody starts playing these, you know, 5.5 men per play in the box, 5.5 men in coverage, daring other teams to run the football. And that happens regardless of who the quarterback is, right? So that is flat with respect to who the quarterback is. Mm. And then running the football becomes something where, you know, like we look at, you know, the two teams that had the best perfectly blocked run rate were the Washington football team last year and the Kansas City Chiefs. But a lot of that was formational. A lot of that was you're just blocking one less player. The Washington football team actually had really good run scheme and a lot of wide receivers in the game. So their numbers were not, you know, their numbers weren't as hard. The Chiefs had, you know, the two high stuff. The issue with that is, the Chiefs face the two high stuff because of Patrick Mahomes. So all that running space, all that kind of stuff, I still attribute to him. Mm-hmm. If the game evolves a way where teams are just going to say, look, we're playing too high no matter what. We're not, our linebackers are not moving at all no matter what. And it's up to you to block 5-on-4 and to win every single time and to get 6 yards a carry. Then I think maybe there is a little bit of value shifted away from the quarterback. And that only happens if that is applied to every offense the same. If it's applied only to the good quarterbacks, yeah, and then you still play 8-man boxes against the shitty quarterbacks, like that's then quarterbacks are still important, evidently, right? So that's the one thing that I think could happen.
I am a shark attack survivor. It's couples retreat, by the way. Michael got it right. Well done, sir. I think that's a good answer, but I think it's kind of a cop out because you're changing the way the league runs. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming like the league is only going to get more pass heavy because passing is more efficient and eventually people figure that out. Like what's the reason? And gosh, trying to think about this myself, one of the things that I was kind of coming up with was similar-ish to your answer, where scheme becomes such a determinant of the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about having like anyone with an arm can throw, you can make these throws. And you've just got, you know, you've got so many people out there with an arm that can do that. And it's really about these kind of other things like, you know, mobility or, you know, who your offensive line is, who your wide receivers are. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Do you think, I just think... I mean, the analogy we made a while back where quarterback play is the mid-range jumper of basketball. Mm-hmm. And there are some guys that can just knock down a mid-range jumper at the end of the shot clock. And there are guys who need to sit in the corner and shoot threes, right? Uncontested threes that are set up by other people. And that differential exists and it will always exist. And, that doesn't make you a bad player if you sit in the corner all day and shoot threes, but it certainly means you depend, you know, a lot more highly on your teammates, and there are just gonna be guys who are like that. Go ahead.
In between lengthier questions that we ask, I'm gonna initiate a fire round.
Okay.
Where I'm gonna pick questions from the chat and you're gonna answer them in 10 seconds or less.
Okay.
Over under Sam Howell games started.
This season?
Yes.
2.5.
Nice. Is DK getting traded?
Yes.
And last one from the fire round, did Bruce Arians leak Brady's retirement because he was bitter?
No.
Okay. Question that I have, this is a good question. This is from Matthew Wallace, Maddie Dub 49, which I assume means he's a 49ers fan, which is obviously why I'm reading this question. Which current divisional favorite is the most likely to miss the playoffs? So let me go head over to DraftKings Sportsbook while you think about your answer. And I will read for everyone the current divisional odds favorites. So we'll start with your AFC West. The Chiefs are the favorite there. We're going to treat all favorites the same. Bills, the favorite in the East. Cowboys, the favorite, in the AFC East. Cowboys, the favorite in the NFC East. Packers, the favorite in the NFC North. In the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In the AFC South, the Indianapolis Colts. I already mentioned the Chiefs. The Rams are the favorite in the NFC West. And in the AFC North, the Ravens are the favorite just by a smidge over the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay. So the Bengals, I was going to say the Bengals, but they have been eclipsed. Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting because, so, my gut reaction, and I think this is the wrong way to think about it, is the team with the, you know, the longest odds would be the one that would be the least likely, you know, the most likely to miss the
playoffs. Kansas City is a lot more likely to miss the playoffs than like some of these other like in the NFC that are not higher that like. So my gut reaction is Dallas. Dallas is like and actually, do you want to hear something hilarious? Who had the best point differential in the NFL last year?
Was it the Packers?
I think it was the Dallas Cowboys. Like, well, the Dallas Cowboys outscored their Dallas Cowboys in Pro Football Reference's perfect simple rating system was first. The Dallas Cowboys outscored their opponents last year by 10 points a game.
Yeah, they had some blowouts.
Right. And they were also
killed the Commanders like literally two times. That'll do it. So, okay.
Yeah, they had the two Eagles games.
I think you're wrong, though, in that shouldn't the team most that's like a division favorite that's most likely to miss the playoffs be one in the AFC because the AFC is better?
That's what I'm saying. So I think, for example, I think like the Dallas Cowboys have shorter odds to win the East than like the other teams, but they could still back ass into the playoffs.
Oh,
at 8-9.
So you're saying they're more likely to lose the division but make the playoffs than a team like the
Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs is like minus 220 to win the division, but I could totally see them going 9-8 or 10-7 and missing the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Green Bay could like have a crappy year but still finish 9-8 and back into the playoffs. I think it's still Dallas.
And by the way, you can bet on this. So the Cowboys are minus 250
to make the playoffs,
and your Kansas City Chiefs are minus 215. So Vegas would seem to
agree with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the AFC is just – I mean, the fact – like, what would you put as the
– Actually, they would disagree with you because this is to make the playoffs. So the Cowboys are minus 250 to make the playoffs. And
the Chiefs are minus 215. Yeah. So the Chiefs are more likely –
To miss
the playoffs in Dallas. Okay. Here's the question I have. The seventh seed in the NFC versus the AFC. Handicap the game difference between those two teams.
You mean the difference between playing those two teams in the playoffs?
No. Like let's say the AFC team that's the seventh seed like wins 10 games and the NFC teams win 8. That's a 2. So would you put that 1.5?
My initial inclination was to go more than that, but the schedule that the team in the AFC has to play also comes into play. So, yeah, I think 1.5 is right. So my initial answer, interestingly, Eric, and this is why I read this question. My gut reaction to this was that the correct answer is the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, this sounds like I'm on drugs. I am not, in fact, on drugs. But I think the reasoning here is pretty obvious. They have the hardest path of an AFC team to winning that division, right?
Yeah.
Now, the counterpoint to this is, okay, let's condition on this team missing, or not winning their division. Which of these teams, and it's, you know, in the AFC, the Colts, the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Ravens, conditioned on them not winning the division, which one is most likely to be a shit show?
It's the Colts.
And it's the Colts.
Yeah.
So the correct answer here is the Colts, who are actually minus money to win the division. But if they, the chances are that they could be a nightmare. Whereas with the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Ravens, there's less nightmare potential for them.
Yeah, I think that it's a.
Oh, it looks like people agree with me. That's good. That's a first.
I think the Colts. I think the Colts really have to lay down to not win this division. And that's, you know, a good thing. Okay, let's look at another question here.
Yep.
I'm going through the somebody asked our friend Sean Clement of Sumer Sean Clement of formerly of the Miami Dolphins and the Baltimore Ravens, I want to say. You know, he asked about, would American football be better with rugby backward pass rule instead of the NFL's current rule for backward passes? He says yes. I actually am not familiar enough with rugby that I would know.
Thanks for asking that question.
But he asked that question.
Would I bet the Colts plus 140 to miss the playoffs? Is that what they are?
Yeah, I think that's not a bad call, to be honest with you.
I don't hate it. Especially for you, Jacksonville Jaguar yourself.
Yeah. Okay, so let me but I don't know enough about rugby to give a good answer to that question. So let me actually ask a better one here. I'm going through here. How do quality tiers and distributions matter differently to different position groups? So expect, e.g., O-line important to be average with no clear weak link. Mm. Is D-line the same, or does having one elite player matter more? Or is it depth above average talent, et cetera?
Well, depth
this is a good question
depth
because
matters.
I think that folks don't quite like grasp firmly how important depth is to every position except QB.
Okay, so QB is obviously the one where depth does not matter. And having one elite player matters the most. The position group where an elite player matters the second most would be what in your mind?
I think it's either wide. So I'll come back. So wide receiver and defensive line are still weak link systems. Like you still go as far as your depth goes, but they are stronger link systems than everything else. Than everything else on the in the game. So it's quarterback's a strong link system. Like your depth doesn't really matter. Your quarterback gets hurt, fucked. But every other position is you know, statistically speaking, you go as far as sort of your worst. You go as far as like your second or third worst player at wide receiver. It's especially exacerbated in the playoffs. But I'll say wide receiver, and here's why: because I think once you have that depth, or even in the absence of depth, a really, really good player can win you a lot of games. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think of Jamar Chase. I think of Devontae Adams. Those were like Jamar Chase took a team that was a 4-win team and got him to the Super Bowl, partially obviously with Burrow. But like he's a force multiplier. You look at defensive line, I think that player, if defense was as equal in importance as offense, then the answer would be edge. But defense is not as important as offense. So a defensive end who comes in and has a comparable output to Jamar Chase is not affecting his team as much as Jamar Chase is.
Okay. I agree with you. I have a slightly different reasoning, but I think puts us in the same place at the end. So the way that I answer this question is, again, I agree. It's between wide receiver and defensive line, you know, edge rusher or Aaron Donald. And the way that I answered this is, given the other things that you have on your team, which one is going to be worse, that much worse off if you have just depth versus if you have the elite player? And the way that I think you answer this is scheme. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, you can certainly scheme a bunch of average receivers, no doubt about it. But in my opinion, you can do a much better job. And I think we've seen this, where if you just have depth along the defensive line, you know, guys like Bill Belichick, who have had nobodies on the defensive line. I mean, Kyle Van Noy has been leading, you know, the Super Bowl champion Patriots in pressures. And so I do think it's a very close question. But I think at the end of the day, the elite wide receiver is a little bit more special above the scheme and enhances the play better than the defensive line.
Cool.
That's a good question. Okay, it is time for another lightning round. First question here in the lightning round. Is Deontay Johnson going to finish as a top 12 receiver this year?
No. The quarterback. So, but man, the quarterback's been bad there for a while, but
yeah.
At least Big Ben got the thing out of his hands, and I think like was like uniquely suited to having Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson's good. Too many drops, but a good player. I thought you were going to say, was he going to finish his career in Pittsburgh? Mm. I think no way. Like, Pittsburgh does not sign these receivers to second deals. So,
okay. Second question. How close, in your mind, are Mac Jones and Jalen Hurts as passers? A standard deviation or less?
Less than a standard deviation. Okay. Mac, so here's the thing we don't know about Mac Jones. I think, and somebody called us on this, I thought it was fairly reasonable. I don't think either one of us will say that Mac Jones is a high ceiling, right? I think people know why. From week 12 on last year, here was Mac Jones's passing grades. 53, 45, 61, 46, 85.5, but that was against Jacksonville, so it doesn't count. 56.8, and then in the playoff game against Buffalo, 76. But, of course, that was, 6.1 yards an attempt. Mm-hmm. 38 attempts. They were behind by a mile going into that game. Hurts was more consistent. Like Jones started his career wonderfully.
His 10 seconds or less thing is great.
But. Sorry. But, damn it. Anyway,
sorry about
close.
The swearing.
I think it's close.
Okay, this is a good question. This is from Andre, Horatius 99,
love
on Twitter, and his question I think is very interesting. Maybe I'm biased because I do auction drafts in fantasy, but what if the draft were auction style instead of normal? Okay, so everyone, let's say everyone enters with the dollar equivalent.
Yep.
Of their draft picks, salary.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is fascinating. And this would be amazing television. Can you imagine Jerry Jones in an auction style? This would be incredible. I love this question. What would PFF's strategy be? Stars and scrubs or, spread it out?
Oh, I think it was spread it out. But I also think that this is what it would be like if you abolished the draft altogether. You would just give the
yes and no
salary cap.
Yes and you'd keep the salary cap.
You'd have your salary cap like sort of
dictate how much you could spend.
Right.
I do think it'd be really interesting though for everyone to go into the draft with like the same amount of money, right? Because by and large, teams do have. Right? Isn't the draft capital closer than like actual salary cap?
But you don't get it. You don't get it reallocated. Like
it's true.
And it's such an insignificant part of your salary cap that it hardly ever matters. But in a bidding war situation, I think what you would see is fewer teams acting like the Raiders did at the beginning of the Gruden era. You'd see fewer teams
bidding on Cleveland Farrell.
You'd see, well, no.
Yeah, because this is what would happen. This is what would happen. This would be first off, anyone that plays fantasy and does an auction draft knows exactly what's about to fucking happen. Think about the first time that you did an auction league, okay? I remember this clear as day. I'm in two leagues, one with my college buddies, one with my high school buddies, and the first auction draft, and honestly, the ones since then, all go the same way, where people overspend a ridiculous amount on the players that they want at the top of the draft.
Yep.
I've spent like $200 on Tom Brady before, and I have no shame. Would happen. Right?
But I think like what I'm trying to say is I don't think teams – so this is the 2018 Raiders, so Gruden's first year. Derek Carr was making a lot of money, right? Doug Martin was on this team. Marshawn Lynch was on this team. Jordy Nelson was on this team. Jared Cook was on this team. I'm trying to think of everybody else. Like Tahir Whitehead was on this team. Like they had a bunch of no offense, but like crappy veterans on this team. If you had to keep a war chest around to bid for rookie players, you would never, ever do this, right?
True.
The only reason the Raiders could get away with doing this is because they know that draft picks are cheap and they're cost controlled. And so if they completely crap themselves signing Jordy Nelson, that they could get out of it, teams would, like veterans, I would say, would not last the veterans in the NFL will not see the light of day if there was a draft, like if the draft was concocted that way.
The Raiders would call out Cleveland Furl and yeah. they'd call him out and their starting bid, like say everyone, you know.
Actually, the Raiders would do better, right? Because
because here's what they do. You think so, but they're not calling out Cleveland Furl starting at $1.
Yeah.
They're calling out Cleveland Furl like Cleveland Furl $50, and everyone's like,
yeah.
Wait, but what do they know that? But
and maybe the Chiefs would be like, $52. Like they'd bid him up a little bit just to know because they thought they were tough. Like,
stop it.
Like whenever.
We've had a fair number of questions that have nothing to do with the Chiefs, and it's been really refreshing. By the way, if you're playing fantasy, so, you know, it's getting to that time, and I know you do this. I do this too. Not as much as you do, but by far the best way to prep yourself for your fantasy draft, whether you do auction or not, is to go to Underdog Fantasy and do some best ball drafts. Because the nice thing is you can put real money on it, so you know people aren't fucking around. It's not any of that stupid mock draft bullshit that's out there. And you can actually win money because of it. Best ball doesn't require you to do any of that start, sit, decision BS. You don't have to pick up players on waivers. You draft the players, and then you the ones that score the most play. And here's the cool thing. You go to Underdog Fantasy or download the app right now. Use promo code PFF and deposit up to $100. They'll match it. And then when you use promo code PFF and play 10 of those dollars, you get a free PFF subscription. This is such a freaking deal. So go do that right now. Promo code PFF, underdogfantasy.com or the app. Quick question. So this question came in, friend of the podcast, member of the syndicate, Matthew C. Devine. And I actually am now thinking about the other side of this question. So his question is, how are the Seattle, quote, we need another running back to establish the run, Seahawks, an absolute lock at under 5.5 plus 105? Now, my question to you is,
I know what you're going to ask.
If they're trading for Baker Mayfield, they're winning 6 games.
No, they are not. Like the only thing that's keeping me, and I do have a bet on Seattle under, and the only thing that's keeping me from betting Seattle under more is waiting for Baker Mayfield. Come on down. You are the next contestant on The Price is Right. I think Russell Wilson might not be a Super Bowl candidate player in the first year in Denver. Like, that's one part of my opinion. But my other part of the opinion is he was absolutely keeping that thing alive in Seattle. Seattle, you remember those games where Russ was struggling when he came back and he couldn't, like, feel the ball? They went to Washington and lost to something called the football team.
Hey, they have Carson Wentz now. They're a real football team.
Did you watch the game against Green Bay where like Rodgers had long COVID and freaking Russell Wilson couldn't grip the ball, and it was atrocious. And like you watch the Geno Smith games, remember we sweated out his Geno Smith that Sunday night football game?
The word jeans,
and he covered. They covered, but my thing is that the Seattle Seahawks. And I know they just hired some analytics people we like. Good for them. I'm really happy for them. The Seattle Seahawks are a bus fire of talent. They have no talent at all. DK Metcalf is a fabulous wide receiver who is going to have like 617 yards this year. Tyler Lockett, same thing. This is like this team, the drop off from Baker to Baker from Russell Wilson is still enough for our friend Matthew to be extremely right here.
So I agree with you. The Seattle Seahawks, if you think about, I like to think about NFL teams as like the strength of a cast on a TV show.
Yeah.
The Seattle Seahawks are a shitty, Spanish speaking soap opera how am I forgetting her name? It just escapes me. Gloria on Modern Family characters. It's like Gloria on Modern Family's over here getting discovered. Yeah. And everyone else.
She goes to Modern Family and the thing just, the Denver Broncos. Yeah. But like
people are still watching some of those reruns at some point. That is your Seattle Seahawks. I feel like we've come up with more ideas for other podcasts on this podcast.
Yeah. By the way, it's Sofia Vergara.
Sofia Vergara, The Seattle Seahawks are a shitty ass soap opera that just so happens to have a young Sofia Vergara on it. You're welcome.
By the way, a low-key great Sofia Vergara movie.
Good movie.
Yeah.
And by the way, Favreau parlayed that into a Netflix special.
That's right.
He goes around cooking on a Netflix show.
He chopped it up on that movie, though. Chopped it up on that movie.
By the way, I don't know if we've talked about this, but that's the people talk about dream jobs all the time. The dream job is like having a show where they pay you to travel the world and like eat shit.
Yeah.
Like Stanley Tucci touring Italy. Yeah, Stanley, like, wow. By the way,
has Stanley Tucci missed ever? No. The guy just doesn't miss. That guy, he's great in Margin Call. He's great in, he's great in every movie. He's great in that one movie with Emma Stone in it as her dad. He's great in everything.
What movie is that?
The Scarlet Letter one where she's wearing the A. I can't remember what it's called.
Stanley Tucci is a good person for the least known person with the best life.
Yeah. Actually,
people that not many people actually like. He's not super, super famous, but has truly had like
easy A.
That's it. A 99.9 percentile life.
I recommended his book on this podcast before, but
I can't remember whose turn it is. But I have another rapid fire round. What would you put the Lions win total at?
7.
The coolest uniforms in the NFL. The San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, they're good. Because they're old, the old school one. Yeah.
The best stadium in the NFL.
I haven't been to all of them. It's clearly Paul Brown.
Of the ones that I've been to, I would say, I mean, Dallas is just like impressive. SoFi is insane.
I heard SoFi is crazy.
SoFi's nuts. It's not like the thing is, it depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for nostalgia and freezing your ass off and football, then go to Arrowhead in, you know, December, right? But like if you want to truly enjoy the game, now the only caveat I will put here is that the good point. SoFi is very loud. It is very loud. It's also such a bitch to get out of.
The one place is
People going to football games in 10 years?
I think, well, so
that's my question.
Good question, because here's the thing. So I went to a Vikings Packers game in Lambeau with my uncles in 2013, and we stayed in it's a small town with a football stadium. It's still hard to get out of, but I just remember how like quiet Lambeau Field was because it's sort of like not built the way I used to go to games at the Metrodome. I've been to a bunch of games at Arrowhead. Yeah.
Lambeau's another good one if you want football.
If you want football, Lambeau Field is the iconic.
Yeah, yeah. Lambeau's the one.
Sorry. And the people are crazy about it, and there's bleachers, and
sorry, Nagler.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still like the question is like. When I go to Bengals games, and I'll have NFL Red Zone on my phone just to, like, check every once in a while. Like, the only time I don't is, like, when I go, you know, if we're deep into the season and I'm just, like, I'm tired of football, like, I'll just go to a Bengals game just to watch one game at a time, you know, as opposed to like, being here and watching, like, 15 of them. But, like, I think in 10 years, like, I mean, if they don't have – so Wrigley Field just put a sports book inside the stadium. If there's not a sports book in every stadium, I don't think people are going.
Okay.
So sort of front run gambling is probably one way people
But that's
go.
Not that's not a big enough market. Like at the end of the day, this is like engagement and fun. Like there's not enough degenerate like you'll be able to bet on your phone quickly enough. Like my hypothesis, this is not financial advice, but when Apple and or Amazon is the way that you are watching games, you will get it quickly enough that you can bet on games, and the online service providers, which will probably be also owned by Amazon and Apple, will make it super easy for you to bet.
In a perfect world, Amazon, Facebook.
Not Facebook.
Google, whatever. Yeah.
It's Amazon or Apple because those are the companies that I've invested in, Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but
they're offering 2 cent lines. That's what I'm talking about. Like when you have the user base that like an Amazon has and
they don't care about the juice on the lines. That's the incredible thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But that's their whole business model is offering 2 cent lines, right? And like, so right now, like Barstool is offering 12 cent lines and Amazon comes in with their user base and offers 2 cent lines. You know, you're going to get ton of hold and they're going to kill it and it's going to make sense.
I am going to hazard a prophecy. See if this is correct. I don't think, God, I'm going to be so wrong here. I'm not sure it's 10 years, maybe it's 15, maybe it's 20. in less than 20 years, people will not be going to watch the games live unless it is a totally different experience, mm-hmm. in the way that something like a music festival, mm-hmm. is now a totally different thing. And
cost is a big deal, right?
Yeah, right. It will, if it's going to be that expensive, it's going to be a totally different experience. It's going to be there for people to be seen, you know, not necessarily to watch the product. But my belief is it'll be more, people will go to places to watch, mm-hmm. games that aren't the stadium.
Yeah.
Because if betting really is a thing, then what you want is an atmosphere. Like, I believe that with a few tweaks, Stadium Swim is like the place that people are going across the country to watch football.
The tweak being the cost. I mean, like I was talking to a friend who works for our company. He's a Niners fan. And he was saying, you know, and they live in Seattle. He's just like, I want to go to a Niners game, but it's like $6,000 to fly to San Fran, drive out to Santa Clara,
sit
in shitty seats, right? Yep. Like, but my thing is,
and
like,
shout out Dave Donovan, by the way.
Yeah, fans don't also, like, we move around so much now, right? Traditionally, adults had empirically, I'm not exactly going to get these numbers right, but we have like an order of magnitude more jobs than we ever had before, right? And we move more. So like somebody like me, you know, I also didn't grow up in Kansas City, but like I'm living in Cincinnati and I'm a Kansas City fan. So I'll part ways with a bunch of shekels to fly to one game a year or whatever and go. But it's an expense, right? And, you know, one of the reasons I take my kids to MLS games and WNBA games is they're inexpensive and they don't care. Their price elasticity, you know, is non-existent with these games, or their enjoyment elasticity is non-existent with these games. So it's what I do. But, like, to me, that's the one thing that's keeping these live things alive is families want to enjoy events with their kids. The problem is, for the average family, like, going to, like, Soldier Field is probably not tenable that much. You know,
and there should be experiences that are way cheaper, that are more engaging for their kids. Like, I mentioned Stadium Swim. I'm not talking about, like, an adult, situation. I'm talking about, like, you can have these for kids too, you know, like these kinds of environments.
Our neighborhood in Madeira had a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic, when Ohio State was facing Nebraska, they did have like, they erected one of these like big floaty things and had the game projected on it. Like, mm-hmm. there are things that are happening like this. And I do agree. I think it'll be far different. Here's a great question. And I want to direct this to you. We talked about this, by the way, when we had our meeting with our friend Mike and obviously Chris and mm-hmm. folks who wanted to, you know, were learning more about football today. Funstago Alden,
long time member
of the Syndicate,
good OG.
Great loyal listener here. Number one, defense is a weak link system. Number two, paying for run defense is inefficient. Three, secondary player grades fluctuate year to year. Question: why not play as light of a defense as possible with as many cheap young DBs, hoping some of them end up hitting? I think he's almost there, but I want to hear you.
Why not? So the one thing that I would disagree with, and I'm curious if this was the why you say you're almost there, is paying for run defense actually inefficient? Because my belief is that it is actually... that is the one thing that is efficient, is paying for run defense the right way, right? Paying for a run-stuffing defensive tackle is efficient. Paying for a pass rusher is not. So I would basically do that, and I'm glad you asked this question. I liked this question. I have one that I'll follow up with that's similar for you on the offensive side of the ball. I would basically do this, except that I would spend efficiently up front with run defense in mind.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the chat said the gang invents a sports bar. That's not what we were meaning.
What? Stop.
So you hit the nail on the head. Like, you can't, and the Chargers prove this, you can't play light boxes and have absolute sieves playing defensive line for you. Yeah. However, you can. So, you know, so I look here, defensive lineman WAR the last 2 years. Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward, Chris Jones, Eric Armstead, Leonard Williams, John Franklin. We're starting to get to some higher paid mm-hmm. guys, right? Mm-hmm. Christian Wilkins, a first-round pick. Jonathan Allen, first-round pick. DeForest Buckner, you know, first-round pick. But then you start getting to some players. So Zach Sealer for the Miami Dolphins, you know, very a valuable player, has didn't necessarily get paid a lot. Calais Campbell, our friend, my friend on Twitter, Calais Campbell, doesn't cost much of anything anymore. He's still one of the most valuable players in his position in football, holding the point of attack. We talked about A'shaun Robinson last show. That's another one. David Onyemata, not a terribly expensive guy. Puna Ford, that's a top 20 value, and you're not paying him a lot of money. Even somebody like Dalvin Tomlinson, the last 2 years, has been the 22nd most valuable defensive interior. Cost the Vikings $11 million. That's about half of what the top-end group does. You know, from a cost standpoint, you need to have somebody to hold the point of attack. And I think it's going to be somebody who's less maybe you know, of a Haas than you're used to, right? It's less of a like a Cam Hayward than people believe, but it's still certainly valuable to have.
Okay, this is the question that I was going to ask that is the kind of offensive analogy of this. Synonym to this, which is run-pass splits right now are inefficient. You are the coach of an NFL team. What do your run-pass splits look like?
I would resemble more of like what the CFL does. So the CFL has three downs. You usually punt on third down unless it's third and short. If you run on first down and it's not efficient, your drive is basically, because those quarterbacks aren't as good, right? If I had a league average quarterback, I would throw the ball probably on early downs, I'd throw the ball 80% of the time. And then from there, I'd let it be dictated by EPA stuff. So like if it's second and four, I'd run. If, you know, run more than I'd pass. But it's mostly about like what your run pass splits look like when you can control. And that's first and 10. And I would make a run pass split of 80% on first and 10. And I would select.
Why only 80 is my question.
Well, you have to have some deception. Like, so if you don't, and again, I'm making an assumption here, but if I never ran the ball, then play action would, I would imagine, and play action is becoming less effective anyway. You look at linebacker movement data and stuff, like linebackers don't bite as much as they used to, but I would need some sort of, you know, and I think if my passing rate was 80%, I would face boxes that were conducive to me getting 6 yards on first down running the ball a fair amount of time. So I would run the ball 80% of early downs. And then from there, I would let it be dictated. I would never run on a second and 7. I would never run on, you know, I would never run.
King.
Yeah, I would never run on. I would run a lot on second and third, you know, second. Because I think the other thing that people don't get is, you know, people are like, oh, it's second and 3. You can throw the ball deep. Like that's one of the biggest like myths I've, you know, you getting first downs is important. Right? Third and 1 or third and 2, and you throw a pass, it gets batted down. Well, you wish you would have had that down back because now you're either going for fourth down or you're punting. Second and short is a rundown for me. I'm trying to get first downs. Like the whole time, I'm just trying to get first downs. And a run play on first and 10 is not a path to getting a first down. Like it's just not. Like I'm trying to get a first down on every down. And so I'm passing the ball 80% of the time. And the only doing running on 20%. Because I'm selecting my team to have some efficient things in the run game, namely a running quarterback and, you know, and box counts that are super small. So when I do run, it's the box count is really light. That's going to be my answer. 80-20.
I want to say that's kind of my hypothesis for where equilibrium lies. I think that's a good guess, but I would test it. Like, I would go out there and I would throw 100% of first downs. And I would see, you know, like, because, you know, I agree with you. If you have a running quarterback, I think that changes things a little bit. But I would sort of reserve running for, like, plays where I'm catching the defense off guard, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I just pick up a first down, I go no huddle. You know, they've got no clue what they're doing. I do a quick count. You know, I'd have those running plays kind of ready to go and sort of use them as those daggers. So I would say I would try 100%. I would try 97, 95 and kind of see how it goes. And you may think that's crazy and ridiculous on first and 10. I don't. I think I would run more than the average team does, though, on third and short. I would run more on second and short. And, you know, I would think about also, and I know I'm not like a scheme nerd here, so don't like put me in prison for this, but, you know, just because play action exists doesn't mean that it's the only form of misdirection. You know, so I'm not going to come up with it here on the spot, but like there are other ways to, you know, as you said, like play action is working less and less. Yes, because people aren't stupid. Like they know what's happening here. Yeah. A defender is going to learn over time that if it's a run action, that if they react to the run, the chance of ruin is way higher than if they react to the pass and then react to the run. Like they're going to learn that over time. And so there will be different ways
to cause misdirection.
Absolutely. Like I'm not saying like that you come back to like the halfback draw. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, I would test it out. Okay. Let's do one more question from you.
Okay. Let me get back to where we are here. And actually this is going to come from a previous, this is going to be unsolicited. Let's go to, who is the cutoff at quarterback for where you try to build around them?
Question.
And versus where you keep throwing resources at it. This is also a similar question to Zach Bradlow, who a good friend of the show as well, who said basically like of the quarterbacks who are not on veteran deal or
not on rookie deals,
which of them would you prefer over a rookie
like Young
highly,
or Stroud,
a highly drafted rookie like Young and Stroud? So those are two similar questions.
Oh man, I'm glad you asked this one because I was going to ask it. So like the analogy that Zach used here was, would you rather have Russ or Lamar at their non-rookie deal or Young, Bryce Young, or Stroud? Man. And this is similar to the is Russell Wilson elite question, which I think we're kind of answering here too. Man, okay. I reserve the right to change my mind, but I think I would rather have, I think to me, Lamar is the cutoff. And I think Russ is right inside.
Okay.
And the reason that I say that is if you were redrafting those guys, you would take them number one without a shadow of a doubt. And the hit rate on a number one quarterback is not 100%. And you can win, like, you can win a Super Bowl with those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Even if you're paying them.
The real question I think folks have to ask themselves is, do you believe that Baker Mayfield was a successful pick at number one overall? Because I think that that really directs the answer to all these questions.
What's your answer?
Yes. I think Baker Mayfield was a successful number one overall pick. And I think ultimately...
Why?
So in the preceding 32 games before Mayfield, the Browns were 1-31. In the games that Baker Mayfield played, the Browns were 30-30. Now, again, I think everybody says, oh, with that first pick, you need to have the next franchise quarterback. And the base rates would suggest that that's actually not, like, the base rates would suggest that you're asking too much.
Okay. So I'll disagree. But here's my reasoning for that. Guess where they are now? Well, they're in fucking hell is where are right now.
But back up the train a little bit. And I, assuming Deshaun Watson was a normal quarterback and they did all this, stuff.
This is how we know.
Here's my
I get what you're saying. Here's my point.
Baker Mayfield showed the Browns what was possible.
Right. So what you're saying is assume that Deshaun Watson wasn't a total fucking piece of trash and that, you know, that he was a good person and you just happened to be able to get a good quarterback.
Baker Mayfield, look, the Browns went 8-9 last year. And Baker Mayfield was like the worst version of himself.
Yeah. Can only Jimmy G could overcome
from
those
2000
injuries.
And sorry, 1999 to 2020, that Browns team played exactly one playoff game and won none of them. And now Browns fans are pissed off about an 8-9 season, right? That's my point. Like Baker Mayfield was good enough to show the Browns what was possible.
Okay, so your answer to
after
this question,
years of
where is the cutoff?
The cutoff for me,
the best dad in the world answering this question. You've been waiting.
The cutoff for me is that tier that I put Dak Prescott and Matthew Stafford in.
Oh, okay.
So you got the first tier, which is the Hall of Fame guys.
Yeah, yeah. So Russ and Lamar are in there, and you're extending it actually a little bit further out than I am.
Yeah, like I think I wouldn't give up on Stafford because I do think Stafford.
I wouldn't give up on Stafford either.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't rather have the number one over. I think here's where I think this question hinges, is on what are you assuming the strength of that number one or of that draft class are? You know, like if it's Trevor Lawrence, I'm taking Trevor Lawrence. If it's Joe Burrow. I'm taking Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
If it's this recent class, then no, of course not. So I think that also.
Yeah, you make a good point. The number one overall pick is certainly a thing that.
Okay, I have one more question. It's a good question. It came from the chat. Before I get there.
We really appreciate all of you guys, by the way.
Yeah, hanging out on a little
Tuesday
evening.
Guys and gals giving
us
questions and stuff. So we really appreciate that.
By the way, because we love you so much, 25% off at PFF. Subscription with promo code forecast FRECAST right now at pff.com. Get yourself set up for the entire season with all of the grades, data, content, betting, and fantasy tools that you could possibly need, plus some cool stuff coming your way this season. So go get it. Forecast FRECAST is the promo code. Okay. We had our secondary rankings come out. Mr. Michael Renner put these together. He had Baltimore first. At number one, and Jordan Poyer of the Buffalo Bills quote tweeted it with a laughing emoji. Does he have a beef?
I mean, okay. The Bills last year were fantastic everywhere on defense. They were first in everything.
And Trey White was hurt
for the second half of the year, right? That happened against the Bucks. They also faced one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. They had from a weather standpoint the easiest home games to play in for a defense. Their win speed average and median was the highest in the 9 games they played at home. So they had a lot of things go in their favor. And then this is also forward looking. You know the team that led the league or was the worst team in football last year in yards per play allowed?
Was the Ravens.
Yeah. Like the Ravens were terrible defensively, but obviously you have Peters, you have Humphrey out for a great deal of the season.
They drafted Kyle Hamilton.
They drafted Kyle Hamilton. They get Marcus Williams to play free safety. Chuck Clark's still on that team. So I would put the Ravens in the top 12. I don't know if I put them one. I think one's a huge projection because the thing.
Who should be one?
See, this is where I disagree with Mike, and I know Mike's a Packers fan. Green Bay? Like, Jair Alexander's the most valuable defensive player in the league 2020, right? If we're allowing for projection from an injury player back, then the Buffalo Bills have a point because, like, basically what you're saying is Trey White's hurt, Kahir Elam comes in. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not sure about that. Teron Johnson's a great nickel.
Yeah.
So, like, I do think Buffalo has a case. Plus, the safeties are really good. But to me, it's Packers, right? Because you go – Adrian Amos is the second most valuable safety in the NFL the last few years. Mm-hmm. We talked about that last week. Jair Alexander is one of, if not the best corners in football with inside-outside flexibility. Mm-hmm. Eric Stokes, I know we didn't like him much, but he played well as a rookie. Rasul Douglas played well last season. So you got three corners who, in theory, are good football players. Mm-hmm. Darnell Savage is a first-round pick who's, you know, he's fine. Like, I think that there's a lack of weakness there that people should buy more into. But secondary rankings are hard because you're having to predict injuries. You're having to predict fall off. You're having to predict, you know, like.
I don't think you should try to predict injuries, right? You should just kind of say like, well, this is kind of where they're at.
Right. You but know, like, how good is Marcus Peters going to be after a year out of
it? Yeah, yeah, I get what you're saying. Project return from injury.
Yeah, that and, yeah, or how, yeah, like, how good is Trey White going to be if he got injured in November? He's now playing. Like, clearly Marcus Peters is going to be further along, but how much further along?
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'll give you one more that I believe should have a case here, and that's the Miami Dolphins. You have Xavien Howard, Byron Jones, and then Javon Holland in the back there. They have some questions at nickel, but I think that's one to consider.
Yeah, Noah Igbinoghene was a first-round pick that has been poor so far.
Not great. Not great thus far. I'll also – I mean, you can go read this on PFF.com. I encourage you to check it out. I'll throw one more your way that I think deserves consideration, and that is the aforementioned Cleveland poo-poos. That was our podcast. This was a lot of fun. We appreciate all of you for throwing in your questions, for hanging out with us live. If you don't watch us live, you should, and we try to get involved in the chat, hang out a little bit. Hope you're enjoying your summer. We'll see you in July. We'll be here during the July 4th weekend because that's what we do. Those are the type of people we are. We love you very dearly. Peace out.